Blog Talk Radio.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we lose our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we lose our soul, if it takes all night long. The evening sun is sinking low. Clock on the wall says it's time to go. I got my plans, and I got plans for you. I'll tell you all exactly what we're all gonna do. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long.
Why is it 12 o'clock and it might be 3? Time doesn't mean that much to me. Ain't felt as good since I don't know when. Don't know when I'm gonna feel this way again.
So come on, get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long.
Might be 6 o'clock, it might be 8. It don't matter that it's getting late. We're gonna make the band play one more song. Get in the groove if it takes all night long.
Get in the groove and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long. Come on and let the good times roll. We're gonna stay here till we soothe our soul, if it takes all night long.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fill My Eyes with Poetry. Oh, my goodness, what a day, what a day. And all night, if it takes us all night long, gosh dang it, we're going to have a good talk. Just kidding. It happened in 2 hours, not all night. Oh, my God, that wouldn't be worth a darn. But, yeah, so I hope everyone's having a great week. It's Friday. Hope you have a better weekend ahead of you. Hope it's all good. You know, it's all good stuff. Great board tonight. Full board. Lots of carryovers from a couple of shows, but good carryovers. So just lots of good stuff. So we're going to do our best to bring as many of these poems as we can to you tonight. And hello, Laurent.
Hey, I was scared to death that when you said, if it takes us all night, we're going to do every one of our poems.
I like to finish them, but, you know, I've been known to ask people to stay overtime. Yeah. But you all been so well-behaved, I can't, like, give you any kind of, like, detention or anything. So I just have to ask. You know how it is. Hey, people, your fan comes saying hello in the room. We got Cal and Sapphire Rose. And hello, everybody. I don't know. See that? See that? Cal told you. Better clean it up. Hello.
It was completely clean. Absolutely clean. All I did was translate.
That's the word.
Let the good times roll.
Well, you have to teach me that later.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
It's a great Cajun French song, Let's say le bon temps roule. You know, a lot of broad accents. It's a cute thing. You should run it next week.
Well, I don't know. We'll have to see. Cal, I don't know. I had to check out those lyrics of that new song.
But if anybody is here tonight for a good time, that is what they're going to get.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the ticket. Oh, my, my, my.
No public displays of affection, but we'll give them a good time.
Oh, really? I don't know about all that.
Well, I mean, physical.
I'm giving out hugs and love, man. That's it. Public displays. Just saying. Just saying. Don't try and hold me back. No. Well, we got lots of great poetry, that's for sure. And, yeah, if Miss Mindy calls in, I'm going to have, I got one for her to read. And I just picked out special for her. And we have Miss Cal is joining us. Hello, Cal. Welcome aboard.
Howdy.
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 Western.
Howdy.
Western theme tonight. Western theme. Hey, Cal.
Hello.
I did my best mini pearl on that one. Howdy. I got a tea bag hanging off my hat, too.
You got so much twang, I'll bet you speak banjo.
Hey, can you take it right, Roy?
Too crazy. It's all crazy. Anyway, yeah, so what a lovely day. Lovely Friday. Full of wonderful poetry with great company. I'm happy. I am happy. So I guess I should behave myself and get going. Lorraine,
yeah,
did you happen to grab
poetry.
A clay? I guess so. Well, I think that was a no, because I think I knew that answer. Okay, here we go. Okay, Laurent, I'm going to start off with you, and I'm going to grab this poem by a poet by the name of Kenny W., who I'm not familiar with, but he was kind enough to join our contest. So, if you would be so... kind and read this for us.
Sure.
Awesome.
This is called The Evil Not Taken by Kenny W. It seems to be a carryover from our contest a week ago.
Yes, sir.
The Evil Not Taken. Two evils emerged in Hollywood Hills, and sorry I could not entertain them both. And being one actress long on set, and looking at the first as long as I could, to where it dipped to the underworld, then looking at the other, to be fair, and having perhaps the worst of fates, because its limits knew no bounds, though all things being equal, the consequences might be the same. I'm telling you this will be somewhat further down the line. Two evils spread from the hills, and I took the one I had never tried, and that has made all the difference.
Okay, nice read. Don't quite know why that last line didn't sound like what I heard in my ear, but I get it.
I was tempted to start reading reading it as if it rhymed. I was positive it was going to. And then it didn't. Well,
yeah.
Kel, do you want to comment, please?
Well, I'm not real sure. I'm trying to sort out who the other evil would be. I know the one is would be West. And looking at the other, to be fair, and having perhaps the worst of fates, because its limits seem about. So ultimately, the consequences be the same.
Yeah. Well,
I'm confused. I was
initially confused too. Let's look at the last line of the first stanza. Can you read it to me, Kel?
Yeah, and that has made all the difference. That sounds like Robert Frost.
No. First stanza, last line.
Oh. To where it did end the word.
So I'm guessing, and I could be wrong, that we have the choice of the known evil and the other thing, which came from the underworld. He took her, or he took something a little more scandalous, perhaps, or a little more evil. At least that's what I'm guessing. And it's a nice echo of Robert Frost's classic Within.
Yeah, I got that. Yeah, it's a very interesting poem. I'm not saying it's not. It's well written. It's well formed. And it makes you think. You know, there's never anything wrong with that. So,
no,
yeah,
I thought he did a good job.
Poem. It's just kind of confusing. What?
I thought he did a good job with it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, my dear. Let's move on to Jean Marie.
Well, I have to say that I really think this is was a very clever take on you know, our prompt and the crossover with Robert Frost. I think that it was nicely done, and it really left some room for creativity throughout. And with that being said, I think that he did a nice job. It was nice brevity and very well done. Thank you very much, Kenny W. Nice to have you join the contest. Okie doke. I guess it's back to me now. Back to Eugene. Oh, okay. Eugene. I'm just playing. I gotta.
Yeah, what is this Eugene guy? You trying to make me jealous or what?
Eugene. Oh, no. Poeta started that. That was all Poeta's boy.
I know, all Eugene. Poeta. I know you're from Eugene.
You had to be here. That Poeta did that. I was sitting there like, what the hell is he talking about? All of a sudden it caught on. I caught on and I just fell out laughing. I said, okay, now I'm dumb and dizzy. It was good. So I had more laughs at it. Okay, so, Kel, I'm going to ask you to read the next one for me, if you don't mind. And if you will, I'd appreciate it.
Pressurized carbon. Rising to the ground by winter's melancholy, heat and pressure sank with every observed falling. Something was happening beneath the soil, formed of heat and tension and a metaphoric toil. Upon the breath of spring, winter let out a huff. From the earth was born a diamond in the rough. And poem.
Pressurized carbon. And of course, goes into the meaning of a diamond in the rough, that unpolished state of a diamond gem. And that is perhaps the spring, which has yet to become completely carbonized, so to speak, or actually a diamond. But given form of heat and tensions and metamorphic toil, spring winter went out of hump. From the earth was born, a diamond in the rough. It's a very nice way, I think, of introducing spring. What did you think, Jean?
You know, I like this. I like the diamond in the rough reference at the end. And I think that it was just a really nicely done brevity. I like the music couplets, and I thought that it was pretty much a story well told. I mean, you know, it was so concise and, you know, on the money for such a short piece. It said, you know, everything it needed to say, and I think she really did a great job with it. And just so you know, I picked up Thomas. Hey, Thomas. Welcome
Hello.
To the party.
Good evening, Tom. Did you read the brevity, my friend?
Oh, yeah. I even commented on it. Just amazing. It was prescient in all ways.
Very clever piece. It really is.
Yeah, well, the nice use.
Thank you. And Cal, what did you think?
Oh, I really liked it. My favorite was, upon the breath of spring, winter let out a huff. I thought that was kind of cute. But, yeah, it's a very well-done brevity on the coming of spring. Beautiful. You know, pairing it to a diamond, it's absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it was. It was nice. And then, of course, by mentioning winter's melancholy and every absurd folly, it almost harkens to the real world, or the human world, excuse me, where those things do happen. Nature doesn't do things that are absurd too many times. So, all in all, it was for brevity, it was an excellent piece. But that shouldn't surprise us, coming from Casey.
Not at all.
All right, Gene.
Okay. Welcome back, Thomas. And let's see, SLR in the room asked if anyone else heard background noise. I do not hear any.
I don't.
If anybody else does, mine.
No,
so,
not me.
Yeah. And normally I hear something. I'm just never sure if it's in my head. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what's happening. So, SLR, I don't know the answer to that. Thanks, Steph. I appreciate that very much. Okay. The next one I'm going to put up for Colap, and I'm going to give this a read. This one is An Aspara Flight. Fancy. By Colap. Now, let me see if I make it larger. You push, I pull. In the process, we advance, despite the crab-leg way. Always advance, my instinct says, even when you're in push. And my pull. My heels are dangerously at the edge of the precipice. Or is it yours? It's hard to say. In this dance macabre of what you call love, for love should be that of holding hands, of swirling in a circle and sort of a trance, and from above. We are just a set of petal skirts unfurling and swaying to the beat of our breaths and the drumming of our hearts, and should stop at the stillness of our souls when two meet one. So when both are at the edge of another dimension, which do you choose, my love? When all you see is dark chocolate and my belief in flying carpets and flying carpets and magic flowers and sterling conch that'll blow that trumpet sound that will awaken dead lovers from their slumber back to life. I shall free fall and a flock of doves will pull me as far away from the ground, away from fear, towards the here and now. In the blink of an eye, I'm vaporized into seafoam, bubbles popping until the very last one. End poem.
Well, by golly, that was a great read. Thank you, dear.
Thanks.
Thomas, could you start us off, please?
Yeah, I looked up the word apsara, because Colap tends to use words with great intention, and it is a... celestial nymph from Hindu mythology, typically the consort of Gandharva, or heavenly musician. And so it really does play nicely into the entire piece. I mean, I love the way that she uses dance as a perfect metaphor for how one struggles in a relationship. and tries so hard to do it right, but more often than not only succeeds in stepping on toes, pushing when the other person's pulling. And the ending makes me think about how, in many ways, she wonders what it would be like if she was just a single person, perhaps, and not having to deal with the constant stress of trying to make it all work.
Very comprehensive comment, Tom. Thank you. I thought it was a great quote from Jonathan Livingston Seagull. There will be something to stand on, or you will be taught why. One hopes that's the truth. My comment, I thought so after the push-me-pull-you of love at the edge of another dimension, close quote, is a potent thought at the tip of your quill. Truth with a nice edge, but armor to soften the blow. It's the armor of faith, as she says, as the prompt says. And I do like, I shall fall free, and a flock of doves will pull me as far away from the ground, away from here, towards the here and now. Excellent, excellent piece on this. And Kel, please.
A really lovely poem about push and pull of, a romance. I really love the magic she put into it, like flying carpets and magic flowers and the dancing and just, so many little things. Really a beautiful poem.
It was. Now, just as a little aside, can either of you guys tell me the most notable use of the phrase push me, pull you in literature?
That was Dr. Doolittle, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes, push me, pull me.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
And on that note, back to you, Gene.
Keep dokie. Well, I think that this was a very nicely done poem. I thought it was well written, and what did I write? I wrote a little something. So it was nicely penned piece, and it was a great reflection of the Jonathan Livingston Seagull prompt. So great work, Colep, and thank you so much. Okay.
Seagully.
Okay. Now, Mr. Thomas, can I get you to read the next one for us?
Oh, certainly.
Ah, you're the tops, man.
You put it up and I'll take it down. Better the Devil You Do Not Know by Neutron Bomb.
Mm-hmm.
The epigraph to begin is, between two evils, I always pick the one I never tried before. Mae West, the poem. Waxing lyrical over spilt milk, it has dried and the olfactory notes are sour. A photo adorns my pocket watch. The beat infiltrates my skin. The copper may be tarnished with pots of patina, but it still ticks audibly. Tick-tock, tick-tock. Burning effigies of old, the diamonds, the demons of past lovers, expurged with fire. Filaments of gold leaf and ash make room for another, a path yet to be determined.
Thank you, Thomas. Well said. If you think, time buries the past. Measuring in its tick-tocks distance from an old relationship, the spilt milk, counting down to a new one, as she says in the last stanza, filaments of gold leaf and ash make room for another, a path yet to be determined. I got to say, I enjoyed the metaphor. I thought the poem was well expressed and stylish. Nice job. And Kel, please.
I thought it was very clever. A photo of the tarnished. And then burning effigies of old, the past lovers expunged with fire. Filaments of gold leaf and ash make room for another, a path yet to be determined. That's just, I really kind of like that idea that, you know, he burns the picture that's already there to, you know, make it for someone else. That's really quite clever.
It was. Thank you, Tom. That's coming. And Tom, please.
Well, I like the first opening stanza because it sort of sums up a whole lot of things. You know, it's the old song, "Don't Cry Over Spilt Milk." Well, all too many people wax lyrical over it, you know. Oh, I'm so sorry it happened, blah, 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 all that other stuff. And I like the kind of bitter note she throws on there. It is dry, and the olfactory notes are sour, you know. It's why did you bother to cry over it? And then the picture in the pocket watch and how it's supposed to have meaning and purpose and be ill to trace my skin, but what comes out is a recognition that perhaps what's done is done and past is past and it's over and get past it and move on, because opportunity may present itself sooner than you expect and you better be ready. Very sharp.
You're a good Boy Scout. Be prepared.
Yeah.
I like the way she takes that, the tick-tock of the clock, which is a little tarnished, but burning effigies of old, the demons of past lovers expunged with fire. I like the way the clock does double duty. It measures the time towards the next lover, but also burns the past, so to speak. And Jean, how about you, dear?
Well, I think.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm here. Don't say that now. I didn't hit the button.
I said, uh-oh.
Oh, because I said I thank you. I know that can be a dangerous
yes.
place.
Right,
I thought it was a wonderful. I loved Neutron's metaphor throughout, and you know, I said sometimes we must know when there's no turning back, and a time to also let go. New and unwalked paths can hold out hope for all of us. So I really enjoyed it very much, and you know, as always, you know, Neutron, you know, makes they're brevities. They're not short brevities. But they're very, again, concise. I guess I'm stuck on that word today. She says exactly what she means. She doesn't use extra words. She just puts it out there, and she really says it well. So nice job, Neutron, and thank you so much. As always. I stopped thinking now we're out. I guess I have to do something because it got quiet.
You're correct. Nice way to land on your feet.
I always remember it's just a little late. Okay, here we go. And the next one I'm putting up, Laurent, is for you to read.
All right. This is by In Walk Bud. So let's get out of these wet clothes and into a dry martini.
Mm-hmm.
Cleavage. Cleavage and curls, my two favorite seeds. Your unexpected fly-by visit really took me by surprise. While sheltering from the pouring flood of my stormy rain-soaked eyes. For you, I've got this burning flame with sparks that shine so bright. And nothing else can fill this need, like a martini late at night. Your sweet chin and vermouth kisses leave leave me dazed and stirred, not shaken. Won't you come up and see me sometime, if you're not already taken? Because when I'm bad, excuse me, because when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better. Good sex is emotion in motion, and I like a tall go-getter. So let's slip off these rain-soaked clothes, snug up, and then unwind beside this red-hot blazing fire, because a hard man is good to find. This was a gold winner in the Art of Seduction contest, and it's certainly worthwhile. Gene, I'm going to give you first comment.
You know, I love this. I have to say, when I read it, I was like, okay. It was just, it was a great write. We had so many in this contest. But the fact that Bud, again, used a bunch of the quotes, and I have to say the truth, when I made that contest, I so badly wanted to put that quote in, a hard man is good to find, but I was really afraid of what kind of poems it might draw, so I left it out. So the fact that she teeth, that quote, I thought was, I was rolling. I was like, oh, my God. I think this really hits all the notes with me. So it was absolutely a great job, Bud. And thank you so, so much for writing for the contest. Excellent.
Well, it's a great poem, but the end, but that last line is so killer. She used it so well. I was very pleased with that. Tom, how about you?
Oh, it was a delightful read. And I agree with everybody. Good use of all the quotes. I'm not sure I enjoy somebody who kisses sweet chin and vermouth, but each to their own.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm a gin fan.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Gal, is a hard man really that good? Wow. Is a hard man that good to find?
Either one.
Yeah, I didn't know which way I wanted to say it. Wow.
Either one.
I should ask you, which is easier to find, a good man or a hard man?
Well, I haven't had much luck finding either one, so.
There you go.
Okay. I'm going to have to step away for a couple minutes. I can't find my inhaler.
Okay, dear. Take your time. Get straight. We'll wait for you at some point.
All right. I'll be there.
We'll be here.
All right, Gene. Take us wherever you will.
Hey, well, and on that note, I'm going to put up a poem by I Love Poems. And I'm going to play the audio that goes with that. And here we go.
Love poems. In this vast night, don't set vast in me. In this vast night, under the moonlight, sense fear. I left my sorrows behind. I soaked my heart with a gentle rain. I tasted the language of flowers with my eyes. I counted the stars one by one. I dreamed of a bird teaching me to sing. Dans cette vaste nuit, sous le clair de lune, sans effroi, j'ai laissé derrière mes chagrins. J'ai trempé mon âme avec une douce pluie. J'ai goûté avec mes yeux le langage des fleurs. J'ai compté les étoiles une à une. J'ai rêvé d'un oiseau m'apprenant à chanter and the storm.
Wow, how beautiful is that? Tom, could you start us off, please?
I always love her pieces. The softness of magic in the night and moonlight, left without any fear. The sense of strength and joy in finding yourself being filled with beauty and grace, so that as you count the stars one by one, you find yourself dreaming of a bird teaching you how to sing. To me, that's just absolutely stunning. That just holds so much sense of peace and wonder and the grace of the world in it. It's like a cup that just runs over. Definitely enjoyed it.
Thanks, Tom. I'll tell you, one of the things that goes missing sometimes in the translation, and not sure anyone's fault either, just lost my page. Excuse me one second. Let me get back here to what we need to be. Yeah, there is, in the second line, under the moonlight, standard phrase, dramatic about it. French, le clair de lune. When you read the French, of course, we encounter the words clair de lune, which is, or clair de lune, which is that immortal piece by Debussy. So, where in French, it rings a bell and registers. It's not going to register the same way in the line under the moonlight, which is why in this case, not for any other reason, I really like the French in this. This is nicely done. Now, let's find out if Cal managed to find enough oxygen for a comment. Maybe she hasn't come back
yet.
Okay, then it's all on you, Jean. Bear the load.
Someone's got to, I guess. I think that this was a beautifully penned piece by Asawa. It's always soft and always, her work is always soft and delicate. And this is no different than that. I think it was a great take on the chosen prompt, which was by E.E. Cummings. I'd rather learn from one bird how to sing than teach 10,000 stars how not to dance. A great quote, and I think she did a nice job with that. So excellent work, Bella, and thanks for sharing with us. Absolutely. So, okay. Well, since Cal is not back, I guess it gives me another one to put out there. So let's see, where am I? Okay. And you're that one. Okay, so Thomas, I'm going to come to you. That's what I'm doing. Wow.
Well, I'm
right where you are. I'm all over the place. Just like, where's Menor?
It's only 5 bucks a bag up here.
See? I'm worth my weight in gold.
Like a rubber ball.
You
want me to read the Jack Tomkovic, right? Traffic.
Correct. Thank you.
Let us do it then. We shall begin. Traffic by Jack Tomkovic. Traffic flows swollen blood. Traffic flows like swollen blood through clogged arteries. Load, cells clotting, drip, drop, drip, head to tail, like ants back to the nest. Pat the wheel, tap the brakes, tail lights flash reddish pink in the darkening sky, horns too loud, the beacon of home 1,000 miles, not 15 bucks. Muscles clenched like fighters, neck kinked with knots like a 5-year-old, dirty laces. Slow down, breathe, deep cleansing, exhale. Might make it after all. And pulse.
Well, thank you, nice read. I guess one of the most strenuous things that we do every day, really, if you think about it, is driving. I mean, if you drive 30 seconds and you're at work, well, God bless you. But if you've got to drive an hour and a half to 2 hours to get to work, that can be really nerve-wrenching. And if you're about to drive 1,000 miles, well, my Lord, I will tell you what. The beacon of home, 1,000 miles, not 15 blocks. muscles clench like fighters. And then this last life might make it after all. I told him that he hit it right on the nose. I can't drive 3 hours without either almost falling asleep or getting cramps. Just from the rigors of driving that never bothered me before. 1,000 miles would probably kill me. And, of course, he came back and said, hey, we've all been there. One of mine was trapped on the Woodrow Wilson Bridge trying to get to Washington, D.C. Thought I'd be there forever. And I guess that may have been the inspiration for this poem. So,
been there when I kind of off it.
Go ahead, Tom.
Me? Okay. Well, first of all, you should have been on the Wilson Bridge when the guy was trying to commit suicide by jumping off it. My father-in-law was there for 6 hours.
Oh, God.
I'm serious.
Oh, my God.
And there's no way to get off and nowhere to go. You know? I like it because, as I said, traffic captures perfectly our argument with the way it is. This is how we think it ought to be. Good thing we aren't gods, or the slips of misfortune and the pettiness of the Olympic gods would be seen as a blessing by all. It is difficult for many to understand. Before you can change anything, you must accept it the way it is.
You're right.
I mean, you know, I've got to be really quite Buddha-like when I'm in traffic, because I just didn't need the stress, nor did I need to fall asleep behind the wheel, because I had exhausted myself with the anger and the tension.
Mm-hmm.
Now I just try to make sure I carry good music with me, because then I'm at peace.
I couldn't agree with you more. Good music or a good audio book on a bridge always works.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, my friend. And Gene, please. Assuming Kel's not back.
Kel, are you back?
Is Kel back?
No, she never left the board, but I'm not sure if she's back or not.
Well, then you'd better open your mouth, my friend. It's your turn.
I know. I think that Jack did a great job with this. I thought it was well written. I said there is nothing worse than being stuck in bad traffic, ever. It's like the nightmare. You know, you sit there and you move an inch. You know, like 45 minutes, you move another inch. It's like, wow. Really?
And then somebody has to pull in front of you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, or they're trying to, you know, get around you so they can get off of the side ramp. It's like, oh, my God, where do you think you're going? You know, they don't realize that's backed all the way up, too. But I have to say, when I started to read this, it reminded me of a Michael Douglas movie called Traffic. Not that Jack is all, like, the same, but in that movie, the dude's stuck in traffic and hops out of his car and he goes on a killing spree. But it just, you know, when I read the title, I guess that's what triggered my memory of the movie itself. It's pretty wild, you know, the things that can happen on that little trip there, you know. You get hung up in traffic and you'd be like, I don't think so, and people flip their lips. Happens. It happens. But anyway, Jack, I think you did a great job with this. And it was well done. And, yeah, good piece. Good piece all the way around. So thank you for that. Yeah. I must now grab the next piece.
Yeah, Kel's back.
Hey, Kel, welcome back. This is very good. Very good. I don't know. I don't hear her.
Yeah, I'm here.
There she is.
Yeah, I'm here. Dog, you did it under my bed.
Chew it up. Yes, that would have been ugly.
There we go.
Okay, Kel, I'm going to put one up for you since we're back. And then wow. Hang on. Something must be sitting on one of my keys here because I put the link in and everything got erased. Okay, here we go, Kel.
Whenever you're ready. I'm a
of the Clouds by Julie Bub. Once they said hello, in a way I'll call indifferent. Sitting here at my window nook, overlooking the angry skies, I realize I've always been an open book. Lots to hide, but too much work. I live on crazy lazy lane, and like a cat, I am cunning and clever. And never would I say this out loud, but today I'm afraid of the clouds. They smell of morose, and their color is gray, and they have not much at all to say. Once the night said goodbye, in a way I'll call detached, chilling me, knowing the world today doesn't care, I'm no match, because I don't care either. That bird in the sky makes me want to leave, and I wonder what that's for dinner. It's not a bad thing being the familial black sheep. I'm free, purposeless, and with no expectations. Nonetheless, please don't ask why I still so often weep. And poem.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well read. Nice job. Tom, let's start with you, please.
So Julie Buck, she's so good at taking the mood and making sure that you know it's from inside out. And the way she does this one so gently, once the day said hello, in a way I'll call indifferent. And then the sitting, I like the way she takes it and like almost as if she takes the day and tries it on, has to say, well, yeah, not really me. This isn't really where I'm at. And she's fine with it. Like, it's okay, the day doesn't care because I don't really care much either. And it's, at the same time, it's also a reminder of how alone she is and how much she doesn't feel part of things. And you get, at the same time, a sense of just how tender she really is.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes you smile almost with the wryness in the way it's written, but it leaves you with a tear just sort of in the back side of your eye. Very well done.
Nice comment.
Wow, nice comment there, Tom. That was excellent. So I'll just piggyback it a wee bit. She says she doesn't care either. But then follows it up with seeing that bird in the sky makes me want to leap, which indicates that she does care. But then, and I wonder what's for dinner, which means that the caring was not in depth at all. The mind wandered immediately, moved on to something else. You know, when the day is gray and you feel detached because the night, in a way, said goodbye in a detached fashion, and the day itself was indifferent to you, and you're that way, yet you still see that bird in the sky. It leaps a little flame, and you convince yourself that it's not a bad thing to be the familial black sheep and alone. I'm free, purposeless, and with no expectations. But, you know, in back of all of that are tears, which is why she still weeps. So regardless of what we say sometimes, no matter how brave a front we put up, we care somehow. All right, who have an idea? Cal, would you comment, please?
Oh, definitely. I can tell you. Yeah, really a very sad poem. In a lot of ways. And she wants to be indifferent. And she doesn't want to care about what's going on in the world around her, you know. But inside, she really does. She cares a lot more than she wants to. And that's sad. No, it's a very poignant a melancholy poem, but it's done in a very it's done in a very beautiful way. You know, and try to, you know, go back and say, well, I don't, but she does. So, yeah.
Totally agree with you, Kel. Thank you very much. And Jean?
Well, I think that this was a great reflection of this prompt. Every time I look at this prompt, I think to myself, it's so hard to believe that's Michael Park, because it doesn't look like anything else I saw of his anywhere. And I think that Julie did a great job of capturing the look outside that window. You know, it's gray, it's sullen, it's you know, it's dreary, it's sad. But you do see that one bird, and the cat looks like, yeah, I see the bird. You know, and I think that that's kind of interesting. It is a sad poem, and I think or melancholy, I should say. Maybe that's a better word for me to use. And I think that it really suits the image, and I think she really did a nice job with the prompt. So thank you so much, Julie. Great job. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now the next one I'm going to read, but I guess it's my turn. Okay. This is called Love is an Art by Kay Heartless. And this is based on a Mae West quote. Says, love isn't an emotion or an instinct. It's an art. Watercolor first impressions. Your eyes are a pleasing palette. Above a lipstick-stained glass, a blended asymmetric drink. Bend my brush. Mix my paints. Romanticism is perverse, I think. You say you like my natural pigments. Are Chiaroscuro? Connected hands. I ponder my... Thank you. Gotcha. I ponder my appeal to your prehistoric chin, carved grin. Attraction is minimalism. The first time we shed layers, stand frozen, statuesque nudes, absorbing each other's refracted light, all is brief, and intimacy is a high relief. Attraction is followed by abstraction, a pointillism of fingertips, stucco surfaces of time. Truth in moldering materials. Seduction is surreal, I feel. The Baroque ring, an exaggeration of grandeur, whiplash of surprise, the pop, I do, a thin glaze of the knee, marriage begins in asymmetry. Precision of instinct, expression of emotion, both play a part, but conceptually, love is an art, and poem.
Well read, Jean Marie, well read. Cal, could we start with you, please?
Yes, but I'll have to make it brief because my dogs are playing. I really love the way she works, the different forms of art into it. You know, watercolor and the palette and symmetrical and asymmetrical and pigments and all that is just really a beautiful work of art. I really liked it. Really beautifully done, and it has an awful lot to say about emotions as well in the expression of the art. It's beautiful.
Well said. Well said, my friend. Tom, please.
I'm with Kel. I liked how she used the art. I also like what she said about attraction. You know, where is it? You say you like my natural pigments. Our chiaroscuro connected hands. This is black and white imagery. I ponder my appeal to your prehistoric chin, carved grin. Attraction is minimalism. As if, you know, it's just the most basic of things. And then the attraction is followed by abstraction. And she talks about, and she uses different art forms to talk about how we find ourselves picking up on little bits of this and that. And then the seduction is surreal, I feel. The play of words, the play of the images, the use of the metaphors of art come together to do a wonderful job to support everything that she has to say about how love isn't just an emotion or instinct, it is an art. I think she chose a wonderful way to go about bringing that forward. Delightful piece.
It was a delightful piece. Well said. In the way that you were pulled to the stands on Attraction, I was pulled to the stands and just above it. The first time we shed layers, stand frozen, statuesque nudes, absorbing each other's refracted light. Awe is brief and intimacy is a high relief. I can't help but think of all the times we've stood naked in front of an individual who we're just about to have sex with. Now, I'm not going to say we love, because that's not necessarily the case. But when you stand opposite someone, I mean, either of you knew, there's nothing to hide at all. And what can you do but basically stand frozen for a moment? Awe is brief, and intimacy is a high relief. Because that moment is also an awkward moment, that first moment when you stand and look at each other, and you know that you're full of desire. You know you just want to engage in that wonderful act that brings human beings together. But because it is a little awkward initially, for the first time, for instance, intimacy is very much a high relief, because now you're not standing and looking at each other. You have each other in a close embrace, and that intimacy is the beginning of everything. Gene, you gave that a great read. What did you think of this?
I thought it was a really well done piece. You know, I really did. I thought that it had a real. Wow, what did I just do? See what you did. I did. I thought it was very nicely done, and it was a great take on the prompts, and just in general, it was a great job. So thank you so much for entering the contest, then. Much appreciate that. And hang on, because I have to fix my error, because I'm not going out of whack here. Okay. Sorry, Sapphire Rose, forgive me. It's not up next. And for my next magic trick. Lalonde, can I get you to read the next one, please?
Yes, you may. It's called The Unity of Strength by our very own Daniel DeShino, who is MIA. I won't point that out. Of the media and the celebrity rage does not a country soul make. To walk among the common man is to see the blood of a country flow from the New England farms and the fisherman's wharf to the West Coast vineyards and shipping yards, from the pulse of city streets to the breath of country lanes. America is work, family, and prayer, where freedom sings through radio waves and songs of youth from that generation's voice, the family of culture from the history of the world, a great gathering of pilgrims of hope, the smile of neighbors, the shaking of hands with friends, the grasp from sea to sea. And though evil may sometimes break the chain, so strongly made, foundations deep, the land of the unbreakable spirit, with an unstoppable drive to build and rebuild for its people, by its people, together with strength. For a United States, who work through the day, survive the night, work through the night and see the light of day, the hard-working pride of the USA. End poem. So Daniel has caught something that I think is not very deep, but imbued in us through the wonderful sentiments of freedom and equality that began this country in its documents of purpose and intent, the Declaration of Independence. It's a wonderful country with many flaws, but I still would rather live here than anywhere else. So let me say that, because that is our pride. But beware the pride be too deep. For as we all know, pride goeth before the fall. And let's hope we don't take that turn. This poem did raise a lot of things, if you will, in my mind that I think are worth extending, but we don't have that much time. So let's go to Tom.
Now, this is very Whitman-esque to me. The whole way that he speaks of the country, starting of the media and the celebrity rage, does not a country soul make to walk amongst the common man and to see the flow of a country flow. And then he just takes off, at least to me. And having hitchhiked across America more than once and worked a lot of common labor type jobs in my lifetime, he catches a lot in here with a broad brush and does it very well, I think. And does he really speak to that foundation that as much as we sometimes can be angered by the belligerence and blindness of people, the resistance and refusal to participate in things that are necessary on the part of people, we all feel the importance of the freedom and the way in which when times become an emergency, how we all pull together. He catches a whole lot of that. I think there's a lot of wonderful things about this piece. Very striking. Very well done. Enjoyed it.
Well, that was a great comment, Tom. I was particularly struck by what you said about refusal to participate. And I think that's so important. In the same way that citizens need to participate in the governance of our country, so too must lawmakers participate in the governance of our country, not in just blind and bullheaded refusal to govern, because they're not there to govern. They're there for other reasons. Kel, what did you think?
I absolutely thought this was one of the best poems I've ever read from Daniel. He's written a lot of beautiful poems. This was, for some reason, it reminds me of the gathering of pilgrims of hope, the smile of neighbors, the shaking of hands, the friends that grasp from sea to sea. It kind of reminds me of the time when I think it was Michael Jackson and a lot of other artists tried to start that chain across the hands across America. Anyone remember that?
Yeah.
And it also makes me think of when the towers went down and everyone realized that the land of the unbreakable spirit was an unstoppable drive to build and rebuild for its people, by its people, together with strength. I think that's a time when we all realize just how strong our country was, because everyone pulled together to try to make the wrong right. And I thought this was an absolutely beautiful piece of work.
Thank you so much, Kel. That was a great comment. Well, Jean, it's time for you to speak your mind.
Well, I thought this was an excellent piece by Daniel. I thought it was wonderful imagery throughout, and I thought it was very well expressed. I loved his take on the prompt challenge, which was a contest for a publication on homelands. So I think that was really well done, and I think that he really hit all the right notes for that. So nice work, Dan. I wish you were here to read it. But we appreciate you, and we'll see you next time. Okay, let me just see if I can get back. Why would I be able to get back to the poem that I wanted to put up next? It's okay.
They say people who talk to themselves a lot are very wise.
They say people that eavesdrop are the same kind of people, too. So, see?
Oh, really? Is that through a keyhole?
Yes. You know you were eavesdropping. If you heard what I was myself, you were eavesdropping. That's
I'm always
I'm
happy to provide crying eyes things they don't want to see.
I saw it, but I couldn't believe it.
You'd be surprised some of the things I've done. Maybe not.
I can imagine. Anywho, Sal. yes, Kel, I have a piece I'm going to put up for you, honey. So here we go.
Okay. Oh, Ellen. Soaring deep in the sky. God is the self-spirit. Ruler is only skin deep. Beauty invites you as flesh existence waits to speak. Daring innocence flows and nudity sits only unseen. Standing on character drowns amongst perceptions my being. I'm lost within mostly rhymes and lullabies, melodies, hoping one day to fly. Grace hue of blue, feathered to wings drift, escape cocooning me as a butterfly, and so on.
Nice job.
Well read. Well read, my friend. Kel, I'll tell you what. I know you just read it, but why don't you start us off on the comments?
What?
I said, I know you just read it, but why don't you start us off with a comment?
Comment. Well, I was just getting ready to write something, so yeah. I thought it was a beautiful poem of self-perception. So beauty is only deep, and that's basically what I think she's trying to say. Beauty invites you to flesh existence waits to speak. Daring innocence flows and nudity fits only to inner scenes. So there's a lot more to her than what anyone can see. And it's done in a very beautiful way. Beautiful piece.
Thank you, Kellen. Thank you for your read. I have to admit that I'm completely taken by the picture, the image, because I do appreciate a curvaceous set of buttocks, and this certainly has that. And then that second stanza says, beauty invites views as flesh existence waits to speak. There's an inference that there is a self-knowledge of beauty, and the nudity of the human body is to be appreciated, but it also waits for its own expression. Now, the Greeks and the Romans gave us, oh Lord, a multitude of nude statues. You know, I say beautiful people, beautifully proportioned, handsome and elegant and beautiful people were immortalized in marble. I think that. But, you know, we always idealized the human form. Now, if you go and you look at some earlier cultures like the Mayan, the Aztecs, etc., and you look at their statues, well, there were some that were with a graceful and beautiful, but so many times the portrayed were done in very strange shapes and forms, almost more human than the humanity glorified by the Greeks and the Romans. And I think this really picks up on some of that and what goes on inside that beautiful, beautiful body. It's kind of a short comment, but what the hell. Tom, please.
Well, I liked it. goddess to self, spirit, ruler is only skin deep. In a sense, the way we are created and the gifts we are given physically, only begin to describe it. Because standing on character drowns amongst perception to my being. And then she speaks so well of what runs loose and wild inside. I'm lost within nursery rhymes and lullabies, melodies, hoping one day to fly. And to me, the entire thing seems to speak of becoming conscious of both what's interior as well as exterior, and accepting the beauty that's in all of it, without necessarily getting caught up in what can result from it. A very lovely piece, a very the word I want to use is blossom. It has that feeling of an awakening flower about it that I really find very lovely.
Thank you, Tom. Well said. And Jean Marie.
Wow. I thought the Felon did a fabulous job with this. Gorgeous imagery and a well-penned piece and a great reflection on the prompt. You know, just she really hit all the right spots with this. I mean, you know, gray teal blue feathered to wings adrift, wings drift, escape cocooning me a butterfly. It's just lovely. And the fact that it's a brevity, she didn't go overboard with the wording. She said just enough. And I think it suited the prompt nicely. So great job, Felon. Thanks for writing for us. Absolutely. Okay, so that brings me to because he didn't read that last one, killed it. So, okay, Thomas, I'm going to put a piece up for you to read now, and I'm coming around for everybody. Thank you.
Okay. I wrote this when I was 25. It was like 50 years ago. Graffiti, the writing upon the wall, cascading violence of sound, the sea and her mother hungry hands, the beach kneels before her breast to kiss her feet, lost in the constant thunder hanging just beyond horizon's edge. Life awakening to the island of its identity, bereft of the knowledge of its totality, worming its way past the shore to stand erect, cast its own shadow, its own reminder of the void it's been cast into. The awakening force of love, lost in the stars. At night, man builds fires for defense, the native tongue of togetherness. Warm me, you cry. The vacuum around us cries out for air, plunging like pressure-fed molecules. We fall into the distance of each other's hearts. The gulls, flown too far inshore, cry out for their lost love, their turbulent home. Love me, you cry. Mountains are rubbed into nothingness for holding too tightly to the sky. The noise is a white light that blinds the deaf, dumb. It's not the pure light that will shine long after the sun has swallowed herself in the ecstasy of midnight's caress. Flowing into the horizon of distance, the word takes over, destroying the value of time. One word, it's not yours or mine, not to be held, never to possess, yet without it. Life is a prolonged form of death. The trees on the mountain, the winds of the plains, are the positive negated by the echoing whine of man's mighty train, man who encases his distance in hard machines, who transmits his voice to those he can't see or ever be with, all caught up, horrified, annoyed. From squall to gurgle, man builds his temples to death, paints pictures for the blind, and says, somewhere I'll find the answer, then all will be mine. Separate, classify. Let us break out. Let us open up. Let the sky fall in. Relieve the pressure. Let us begin again. The valleys sleep and wait for it. The mountains stand to reach for us. Let us return. Return to the Garden of Eden. Don't leave me. You say, I'm not leaving, but you insist I am. War is still waging. There is a war born unto the soul, fighting the silence it can't listen to, running from the shadow to end, shrieking in the face of the shadow of night. Death, it claims no man. You give yourself to it. Offer yourself up to love, and you'll fall right out of it. Be one of those. Be one of those people, the ones that put a price on everything. Then as the money changers are cast out, the doves will still coo in their cages. Sacrifice yourself. The sea will polish your bones like cars in a junkyard. Love, love. Love, love. Then as the mountains fall into the plains and the valleys are the birthplace of the sky, you will be one with distance. You will be beyond time. As the word is God and God is the word, so you will be found in the word, no longer lost in the echo.
Damn, Tom. Mm-hmm. I think you outdid yourself with this one.
Oh, I stopped writing for a year after I read.
I gave a very perfunctory comment for which I want to apologize, because when I read it, I just, and this is like 3 years ago, when I read it, I really didn't know what to say about it. It was daunting to even begin to think of commenting on it. If I had the choice, I would have been a lot more effusive, because I think that this poem is the voice of a younger man who I think has seen truth with a capital T in his life and is able to express it so beautifully. I mean, the very stanza you finish with, love, 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 is the predominant value in this particular piece. Number six absolutely grabbed me. Man, who encases his distance in hard machines, who transmits his voice to those he can't see or ever be with, all caught up, glorify the noise. From squall to gurgle, man builds his temples to death, paints pictures for the blind, and says, somewhere I'll find the answer, then all will be mine. Separate, classify. Isn't that what man does? He tries to chop things up into small pieces. Yet in this particular poem, you look at so much. From the first line, cascading violence of sound, to life awakening, to the island of its identity, to the awakening force of love lost in the sky, the cry of warm me, the vacuum around us cries, and then love, you cry. In order to, I think, experience love in the truest, most complete sense, you do have to, as you say, break out. Let us open up. Let the sky fall in. Relieve the pressure. Let us begin again. There's always a time for renewal. There's always a time for starting over, at least I think. I thought this was a tremendous piece, and I wish I had been a little more aware of excellence when I saw it for the first time, because this piece is absolutely excellent, Tom.
Oh, well, thank you.
My pleasure. Let's get a comment from Cal, please.
Well, I'm going to say, if I had found this on the homepage or on one of my comment things for my poetry, I probably would have skipped over it because of its length. But I would have missed out on an awful lot. this is a wonderful, wonderful piece of writing. And I got to say that, you know, like Laurent, my favorite is 7. Let us break out, let us open up, let the sky fall in, relieve the pressure, let us begin again. The valleys sleep and wait for us, the mountains stand to reach for it. Let us return, return to the Garden of Eden. Those are such beautiful lines. And then, you know, love, you know, that's just, that's the essence of everything. Absolutely the essence of everything, the essence of life. And earth and nature and God and just absolutely everything. And this is a very beautiful, eloquent, deeply thought out and philosophical poem. And I'm glad I got to hear it. Although reading it would have been a little bit more than I could handle because my eyes would have given out. I can only read for short periods. But this is beautiful, Tom. Really beautiful.
Thank you, Cal. Well said. Well said. Tom, before we talk to Gene, I'd like you to take a couple of minutes just to give some thoughts on what you wrote 15 years after you wrote it.
Oh well, this piece, I have what I call my macrocosmic period, which was to the I Sing in Graffiti that Dan is most representative of it, but there's things like The Last Note and others where I wrote big stuff. It's funny what followed this a year later and was written at midnight while working at a 7-Eleven was a really short piece called Mirage. I can tell you it is empty park benches, wait for old men. I sit in my window watching the bus stop collect people as rain brings relief to sweat burdened days. Move over, love, she whispers, and joins me in my window. Like two birds tired from migration, we sit upon the sill, silhouetted by window panes and frames, reaching towards those waiting below. We wait for words that never come. And I've been doing microcosms ever since then.
That's a great comment. Thank you for the insight. And Gene, it's back to you.
Well, Tom, I have to say it's a beautiful, heartfelt piece in a lot of ways. For me to pick any one of those 10 stanzas, I would never do that because they all have merit of their own, most definitely, in my eyes. And, you know, we fill my eyes, too. That's what it's all about. And I think it was wonderfully expressed throughout the entire piece. And I thought it was incredible work. I think your points were very well made and a great job. So, nice job. Sounds.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Okay, now, the hell am I doing? That's a really good question. Okay, I'm going to read one, and then I'm coming to you, Cal. So, here we go. Now, I have to do is find the right. Here it is. Oh, my God, I did it. If I can do this without stumbling, because that would be a plus. This is called The Veil of Anger by Sapphire Rose. So, you sit there in your chair, knowing full well I'm speaking to you. Do you ever listen? Your know-it-all attitude angers me from the depths of fear. Red is all I see. Fearing one day I may hurt you, or you hurt me. Life is full of secondhand emotions. Am I one of yours? You hold captive my joy, my passion, but most of all my rationality. Venomous words circle like vultures. I'm not a puppy whom you can smack on the nose and expect me to obey. I never vowed to love in that way. The beast in me could rear its ugly head and drive fate's sword right through your marriage bed. I tiptoe around you. However, you still treat me like a child. Many nights I masked the tears I cried. At the height of anger, I often wished for death. I'm only speechless. I was rendered speechless. End poem. Wow. Sorry about that. Great job, Sapphire. Great job.
Oh, that was a heck of a poem, wasn't it? My word. Dom?
Absolutely.
A few words, please.
Oh. How deeply is the relationship a reflection of balance or lack thereof? And this so thoroughly puts forward how out of balance things are, and when that happens, the anger that builds, the inability to express things, the feeling that you're hurting the very thing you love, which makes you angry at yourself, and you feel like you're caught in this circle where you're racing round and round looking for answers and not finding any, and beating on the wall because you just want to find a way to make it work. I just found this to be a stunning piece.
Thank you, Tom. Rational words. This caught something in me. You sit there in your chair knowing full well I'm speaking to you. How many times have we spoken to a loved one who might be on the computer or watching TV, or when we start to speak and they're splitting their attention between what they're doing and what you're saying? And when that happens, you know, you always have the idea that, you know, this SOB isn't listening to me, or it's not important enough for her or him to divorce himself from what he's doing for a moment and listen. And, you know, the question, do you ever listen? Your know-it-all attitude is if whatever I'm going to say or whatever is being said is already anticipated, the answer is already formulated, so what is there left to say? Life is full of secondhand emotions. Am I one of yours? And that most important stanza, you hold captive of my joy, my passion, but most of all, my rationality. If we are treated so cavalierly, so casually, well then, there goes the joy, there goes the passion, because whatever it is that I have inside of me is not worthwhile, obviously. And when I do respond in a way that you do not like, you know, I'm not a puppy who you can smack on the nose and expect me to obey. That's not love. What a marvelous poem. Really enjoyed this. Help, please. Gail, my dear.
Oh, sorry. I'm here. I reminded you so much of my first husband that I could have written this. You know, just the depth of feeling behind it. I mean, I totally get where she's coming from, and it's ghastly. It's an awful way to feel when you think that, you know, you can't break away, you can't get away from him, but he won't listen to you. You know, he's just not there for you at all, and it's just crazy. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you, Cal. All right, for some reason I'm lost. Tom, did I get a comment from you? Did you comment, Tom?
You've got a comment on this. I started a comment.
Right. Gene, please.
Okay. You know, Sapphire, I have to say, this was very well said. When relationships fall apart, it's so scary just how ugly it can get and how angry we can get. And I think this was very well expressed. You know, sometimes we're just lucky to, you know, get out with our hair on top of our heads, because sometimes we just want to pull it out, little by little, maybe a lot. Maybe our partners a lot, and us just a little. It all depends, you know? But I think that this was really well done, and, you know, I'm sorry you had to go through that, but I totally get it. I think we've all been there at least once, you know, in some fashion or another. Maybe not to the same extreme, but close enough. You know, ugly is ugly. Anywho's hell. Great book. Now, let me go out here. And Laurent, I have you up next. Whenever you're ready.
All right. Well, I'll read the AN first. This poem is not meant to denigrate women in any way. Rather, it's an ironic, I hope, celebration of their skill and resilience at the game of life and love. It's called Live Long and Prosper. Windward, leeward, you learn to hide from fury, from the distaff shapeshifter who works her lizard eyes deeply into your psyche, anchored like a fish hook set firmly in muscle. No ripping free here, unless you take a giant step off the emotional trampoline, willing to land in the fire and sustain burns which will, in time, heal despite heavy scarring, war wounds without medals. All men have them. Not to deny women their even greater wounds and the centuries of battle scars accumulated at our hands, they have every reason to be pissed in the extreme. Men can be inarticulate, clumsy fumblers of a moment, easy meat, hooked and landed fish flopping desperately towards the water, seeking safety in the cool anonymity of rushing waters, hiding in the thick shadows of stream's edge, green reeds and rushes for camouflage. Outwaiting the wheeling shadows above, possessors of infinite patience, beauty is the beast, cat-like in motion, fishers of men who never forget outrages of infidelity or inattention, skilled with their claws and smiles, physical charms on display, Venus man-trap snaps shut, no exit except for the wrong one. Learn to play nice. Maybe live long and prosper. End quote.
Nice. Nice work, Laurent. Kel, you want to start us off?
Degeneration of women at all. If anything, it's almost, in a way, it glorifies us. You speak of a lot of our attributes and, you know, placing them in words that may seem degenerate, but they're not. Because women will, like, no ripping free here unless you take a giant step off the emotional trampoline, willing to land in the fire and sustain burns which will, in time, heal despite heavy scarring, war wounds without medals. I mean, because, you know, ladies, mothers, whatever, we'll walk through fire, especially for our family or people we care about deeply. And it doesn't matter how much it hurts, we'll do it, you know, because it's what we choose. And I thought this was a very beautiful, well-written poem. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay. And Thomas, how about you, huh?
Well, in a healthy world where people weren't dysfunctional or psychotic or otherwise screwed up, men and women would be really free to talk about how much they really love and admire and respect each other. And this poem catches a whole lot of that. then puts it out there unabashedly, unashamedly, and with great tenderness, even as it strongly expresses how much we are too often at the effects of our emotions and caught in this behavior that we really are rather ashamed of. It's really well written, quite enjoyable. Good job, Laurent.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Nice comment, guys. And Laurent, the first thing I started out was, oh, you poor babies. But I'm just playing. Honest. Very well crafted piece. I thought your thoughts were well expressed. And it was very nicely done. I think there were some real interesting lines throughout, great phrasing. And yeah, just nicely done. So appreciate that.
Thanks, Jean.
You're welcome. You're very welcome. Okay, now Cal, that brings me to you, kinda. I just have to go find the piece again. For some reason, it's not there. Things up and they just disappear. It's like somebody comes behind with an eraser and just goes whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. So, okay, here we go. And, nope, that's not where it belongs. It belongs here. Okay. And, Laurent, this must have something to do with you listening in because, see, she's talking to herself. Don't be eavesdropping.
That's right. Yes, talking to herself. Whisper bear, turning, looking, no one there. Again, hey you, what are you doing? What? Who's there? Spinning. Me, that's who. A little louder. Getting scared, someone's here. Well, where are they? Closet? What are you doing over there? Where the hell are you? Angrily, I don't like being scared. Who? Damn, you sound like an owl. Who, turn around, I'm behind you. I'm looking, but I don't see you. Yes, you do, you're looking right at me. Only thing in here is my mirror. Right, lady, what are you doing? You have got to be kidding me. Mirrors don't talk, doubtfully. I do. Sounds like Eddie Murphy, you know, the donkey in Shrek. I'm a magic mirror for all for you. Get out of here. I don't need or believe a magic mirror, belligerent. Ladies, have you looked at yourself? Yes, you do, laughing at her. Now tell me, what are you doing? If you must know, getting ready for a date, is that okay with you? You're not going anywhere dressed like that. Brush your hair. She picked up the hairbrush, threw it at the mirror, but missed. Feel better? Mirror chuckles. Hell no. Wish I hadn't missed. Come on, don't be like that. I'm here to help. I heard your wish. Eddie continued to explain to her. I've been here waiting for you to make a wish to be prettier, although I think you already are. Thanks. Feeling silly, talking to her reflection, but sounding like Eddie. How can you help me? For starters, pick up the brush. End poem.
I'm chuckling on mute. I wanted you to know that. Now, I don't know how many lines this piece has. It's got to be, what, 60, 70, 80 lines? And virtually all of it is dialogue. And it's very well handled. I got to tell you, this is not the easiest thing to do to maintain a reader's interest over all these short lines. You've got to have something to say. And you do have something to say. I thought that, where is it? Get out of here. I don't need or believe a magic mirror, belligerent. Lady, have you looked at yourself? Yes, you do, laughing at her. Now tell me, what are you doing? Well, if you must know, I'm getting ready for a date. Is that okay with you? You're not going anywhere dressed like that. Brush your hair. That was a moment that I could see that individual of course, talking to herself. The mirror isn't talking yet. The mirror is talking because we're always of two minds. You know, I'm fine the way I am, but I wish I could be better. I wish I could be prettier. Do I have the energy to really get into it? You better. You should. You'll feel better about you. I mean, I was reading all these little things into that. I thought you handled the dialogue really well on this. Well, what made you decide to do it in this fashion?
Oh, I don't know. I just started it, and that's just the way it went.
Well, I'm glad it did. I'm glad it did. And I was going to jump right all over Jean, a little sarcastic miss at the beginning there. But I decided I'd have my say, and then I would put her on the spot. Go ahead here, Turnip. Come on, Turnip.
Turnip? I'm a turnip. You hear that? He says I'm a vegetable.
I heard that.
Crazy man. Okay, you remember that, Cal. Put that on your account. I got it on mine. I might need a witness someday. I think that this was intriguing. I really do. I see the contest was mirror, mirror. So I guess that dialogue back and forth was just perfect for that in my mind. And, I think that it was clever. It was fun. It was, it was well done. So I want to say that. Thank you very much for bringing it tonight.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jean. You kind of skated all around the edges of your initial comment. But that's all right. I'm not going to put any pressure on you. Tom, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. The old song about put a spell on you and now you're mine. I can relate everything to some song lyric. It's really bad. I try not to let it get out in the open too much. This is utterly delightful, Kel. You handle it well, especially the opening with the Who business. It had been too easy to let that run on for far too long, and you got it just right, just nice and short and sharp. You really do yourself proud of this one. I'm quite impressed. Delightful, laughable, and yet very poignant in its own little way.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Thomas. Again, congratulations, Cal. Thoroughly delightful, as Tom said. All right, J.M., it's all you.
J.M., thanks for that. Hi. My word. So,
are you there, dear?
It says be right back. Film eyes. BRB.
Oh, all right. Well, then, Tom, you're going to tap dance for us.
Wow. What is wrong with you guys? I am fine.
There's nothing wrong. I just don't, you know, want my moments of brilliance to be overwhelming or cause physical pain.
No fear, Tom. No fear.
No.
I hear you, Jean. Even if
well,
the other two
somebody here. I guess you know they don't want to eavesdrop, especially Laurent.
Right.
Poor Thomas probably trying to figure what the hell's going on. Sorry, Thomas, for all the confusion. Laurent, you and I are going to talk about that stuff later.
I know nothing.
I mean, you know, when you have a
master,
yes, I possibly hold a light.
I got enough trouble with that having someone messing with me.
Jean, in my defense, there were periods of a few seconds where you completely cut out on me, so I couldn't tell if you were talking or not. I should have assumed you were.
Just trying to please. You're just trying to save yourself for later so that we...
No. Now, Tom and Kel will back me up on this.
That's right. Kel heard me, so you got to be careful.
Oh,
okay,
fine.
I'm putting on the SoundCloud. So here we go. And this
go.
Is by Gerald Green.
Springtime of Freedom, written in red by Gerald Green. The Virgin Nation rests upon the head of His Excellency, the one who voluntarily stepped down from leadership and adulation. She breathes freedom's essence far above the madding populace, hovering for heat and provender under European thumbs of tyranny. George Washington has stopped, no longer moves with time, allows her a few moments to enjoy what no nation has ever enjoyed. His scepter stands beside him, waiting for movement, ready to signal advancement when the season ends. But now is spring, when freedom is to be relished as never before and never will be again. A time of winter will come, when barren plants and leafless trees cover a desiccated ground stained by the blood of martyrs. But now George waits and looks aside, making sure his slaves labor on, while his own kind relishes spring, before she dons her robe of selective liberty. And poem.
Nice.
This poem has teeth. This poem is almost a slap in the face. But well placed, I got to say, well placed. Tom, give it a go.
Yeah, well, he brings out the political scientist in me completely. I love the opening line: "The Virgin Nation rests upon His head of His Excellency, the one who voluntarily stepped down from leadership and adulation." That's so sharply put. And so beautifully set up, because then as he speaks of freedom and all the movements and all the ways in which it is best expressed, when he comes down to the whole thing about spring, when freedom is to be relished as never before and never will be again, that is such a sharp realization and makes the final line about how Lady Liberty donned her robes. All of a sudden, you look back and put that picture, and it becomes totally different. He really took the picture, spoke to it beautifully, and then transformed it completely, and did it in a poem that, in some ways, I find even better than the picture, and striking and remarkable. I am truly impressed.
Oh, yes.
Nice.
Oh, yes. This gentleman has a mildly acerbic wit. Kel, please.
So when I first saw this picture as a prompt, I thought she was sitting on a different kind of throne. James Bond type shit thing. So it's just kind of, you know, yeah. So if you think of it that way, it really is a slap in the face of, you know, political system. You know, cover a desiccated ground stained by the blood of martyrs. This is really an excellent piece, and it says so much about how everything has come around. You know, George White's and looks aside, making sure his slaves labor on while his own kind relishes spring before she dons the robe of selective liberty. Ain't that the truth? Yeah. His, you know, his slaves and liberty all in one line. That's just kind of, you know, I can't see the word, but yeah, it's well done. Very well done.
Thank you, Kel. I'm not completely convinced that the image stands for Lady Liberty. To me, the she in the poem is spring, but the poet blends it so cleverly with liberty, especially, well, in the first stanza, the Liberty Nation rests upon the head of His Excellency, the one who voluntarily stepped down from leadership and adulation. If you know your history at all, you know that everybody wanted George Washington to remain in power. They were all too ready to accept kind of a pseudo-monarchical rule due to the individual, not because that's the way they wanted the government to actually work. But they were ready to give it all to him, and he said no. He stepped down. It's one of the great political acts of courage I think I've ever seen. And yet, that same individual who refused the scepter waits and looks aside, making sure his slaves labor on. And there's always been that dichotomy, the father of freedom, George Washington, who I think is one of the most fascinating characters in our history, didn't expect to be his own slaves. While his own kind relishes spring, before she dies, dons her robe of selective liberty. Now, with springtime comes that awareness of new life, of birth, which to me is tantamount to a kind of freedom, freedom of life springing forth. And to blend liberty and freedom so skillfully together, well, to me, it's a greatly worded indictment, wonderfully done. All right, I've gotten carried away. I don't remember who commented or who didn't. I think it's Eugene, right?
I don't think Tom did.
Oh, then Tom, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon, please.
Oh, no, I spoke to it. I was the first one you asked.
Okay. Okay. I'm sorry.
How quickly we forget. How meaningful
I thought so. It just shows you how easily I get misled. No. Jeez, you're coming.
Well, actually, I'm going to leave my comment in writing because I'd like to get at least two more pieces done. That's pushing it. So I'm going to give it a whirl. And the first one I'm going to put up, Laurent, I'm going to ask you to read just because you're at the top of the list. And you're on the top of my list, all right. So whenever you're ready.
Okay. All right. You kind of took my breath away there. But J.C. Andrews, Spells from the Poet's Quill. Magic and illusion interwoven within the mellow melody of sound, coerced and aroused by the rhythmic assonance of the poet's iambic heartbeat, conjuring obliquely timed rhymes and delicate possum pauses, intrinsically and succinctly bound upon the canorous crown that lingers elusively, melting smoothly over the reverberating tongue and tickling the nether spirals of the ear, as if an angelic feather, coveted and stolen, has been plucked, to manifest the beguiling form of the artist's dripping pen, sharpened and manipulated, dipped into the black of sensuality, the devil's temptation of sinuous sin, with illusions and imagination transformed upon a shuttering silver screen, strobing upon the mind's eye to entertain as flashes of time, yet the hazy gray fantasy lasts but a moment and withers upon the vine. End poem.
Great read, Laurent.
Now, we got about, 5 minutes? You want to jump right into the next one? And we'll all leave good written comments?
No, I'd like for at least a couple of comments on this. And then move on to the next.
Tom, please.
His opening line, magic and illusion interwoven with the mellow melody of sound coerced and aroused by rhythmic assonance of the poets. That's just a great opening of a doorway to the picture and to his thoughts and how he takes us through this journey of the way poetry and magic and spirituality all are woven together and brought forth as fruits upon the vine, lasts but a moment and withers upon the vine. I just found it stunning. It was quite delightful to hear.
Yeah, it was a great piece, wasn't it? And Kel, please.
I thought it was really a beautiful poem. Just really well written. It's got a beautiful flow, and the words are just magical. It's lovely.
Oh, thank you very much, Cal. And Jean, what did you think?
Okay. Well, I enjoyed it. What did you think, though, since it comes back to me? I thought it was a beautiful piece. I thought it was really well
written. You are so sly. Yeah,
a wonderful take.
A wither on the vine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, I really liked it, JC, and thank you so much for writing. You always come through for us on our contests, and I appreciate that. Excellent piece, definitely. Okay, last but never least, none of them are ever least. I'm going to put this piece up by Dmitry Kropotkin. I hope I said that correctly. Just wonderful. Okay, and here we go. Dmitry is new to our contest and our group. Here goes.
Cracked and worn, scratched and chipped, my battered vessel is drawn along by the faintest of breezes. More pleading than plying, I follow your gaze, the line of your lips, and wait for their destination. I shiver at what is left. My fractures click and grind as I shamble from the shadows. I tremble under the weight of being enough. Your scarred and hollow chest reveals indigo bruises and splintered bones. My eyes and hands leap out to shield and heal your pain. Our wounds interlocking, our pain welding us, blending us, mending us.
Tell you what, that was a darn good sound, Cloud. Wow, and a darn good poem. My fractures click and grind as I shamble from the shadows. I tremble under the weight of being enough. It is a heavy weight when you're dealing with somebody who has that much pain, that much in their background, the indigo bruises, the splintered bones. Ah, great. And I love the last lines, our pain welding us, blending us, mending us. Because, yes, take two pains, blend them into something new that mends us. Great piece. Welcome to the group. Jean, 2 minutes. All you.
Go ahead and let everybody comment, Laurent.
Tom, please.
I thought this was stunning. I agree with everything that Laurent said. He really does a beautiful job of bringing the pain toward, bringing the tenderness and the intimacy into the light without drama, without anything more than just a real simplicity that makes it that much more powerful. Beautifully done. And the last three lines take it from being just a good poem to a great poem.
Thank you very much, Tom and Cal.
Oh, I think it's beautiful in so many ways. It's just beautiful. As I shamble from the shadows, I tremble under the weight of being enough. And then the last few lines are wounds interlocking, our pain welding, blending, mending. It's just very beautifully done. Very impressive. Network, and the SoundCloud was awesome as well.
Thank you, Gail. And Jean, your comment?
Well, I have to say, I really enjoyed this audio, and I thought it was a really interesting take on the prompt. The prompt was again a Michael Parks piece, and it was I think it's the only one that had written to this prompt, but it was an incredible kind of take, because you know the strength of the unicorn there I think is what comes through. I could be wrong. I'm not exactly sure what Dimitri's thought was when he wrote this, but I thought it was just well done, and there was a certain strength that and a vulnerability that came through in this poem. And I think it was just very well done all the way through and a great audio. So thank you for that, Dimitri, and welcome aboard. It's good to have you with us. So excellent, for real. So I, that's another thank you. So anyway, I should be quiet now because otherwise I'll just yammer on. I want to thank you guys for calling in tonight and working with me. Thank you, Laurent, for co-hosting. Thank you, Kel. Thank you, Thomas, for your dedication and calling in, keeping us, busy on a Friday night and keeping us out of trouble. Otherwise, Laurent and I would be tired of listening to each other. Could be interesting. But it's always fun to have you guys, and I appreciate it very much. And thanks to everybody who hung out in the room. Anyone whose work was not read tonight, I promise you I'll carry it to next Friday. It's, carryover city. But I'm trying to come up with a solution to that. So that might be within the next week or so. Anyway, y'all take care and have a wonderful night. And thanks again. Much love, everybody. Take care. Thanks for your support.
Good night, all.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Wonderful.
Thanks, honey. You too. Thanks for joining us.